Welcome to episode 411 of Radio Free Nintendo. I am your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, is James Jones.
As always.
Yes, indeed. We don't have either Guillaume or John Lindemann with us this week because it's the holidays. We're right in the thick of the holidays, and they have other things going on, which is entirely understandable.
It's the holidays, cast people.
Yeah, but we wanted to get something out for people, you know, so that it wouldn't be like a really long wait between episodes. So we're doing a little special thing here, and to help us out, we have a special guest, Mr. Alex Kalafi.
Hello there.
Hey, Alex, welcome back to the show, and thank you for helping us out on short notice and kind of a weird time of the year to be doing this.
Oh, I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Did you guys have good holidays?
Did you have
a good Christmas or whatever you celebrate? Just I like to say, did you have a good break?
I didn't get a break.
Everybody gets the break whether you celebrate the holidays or
not. I didn't get a break. I don't hear it.
Really?
I got a day and a half off.
Ew, okay. Well, I've had the past 3 months off, and I don't recommend that. But that is
true.
Yeah, I am in the process of moving. And I'm actually recording in a very weird setup here. My apartment has no furniture in it, so I'm recording in my living room, which is now giant and open and echoey, and so I'm using a different microphone, and everything's weird. But you know, I think doing this podcast, doing Box Office Poison, probably tomorrow night. They're probably going to get me through this transition period. Like, you know, someone was asking me like if I was still going to be doing the podcast, and I was like, oh yes, that's the one thing that actually stays constant and, like, you know, provides some sense of familiarity when everything else is changing. So I'm glad to have something like this. But anyway, as we mentioned last time on the last episode, we're going to catch up on some listener mail this time. And that's all that this episode is going to be. So if you don't like listener mail, you can skip this one, I guess. We'll be back here in a week or two well, I should say in early January, we'll be back with a normal episode. And then probably, I'd say maybe the one after that, maybe the second episode of 2015, we'll do our top five lists from last year, 2014. And by then, I think we'll have all had our chances to play some things that we missed out on earlier, things that we needed time to catch up on over the holiday break. I know I'm looking forward to that as well. I still haven't touched Bayonetta 1 or 2, so I've got a lot of work ahead of me. But anyway, let's do some listener mail, guys. It's a three-man show. We've got a few emails lined up here, and I think there's some really good ones, some interesting topics, things we haven't talked about before, or maybe not in a long time. And of course, the address, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And tell you what, Alex, since you're our guest and this one's short, why don't you do us the honor of reading the first email here?
Absolutely. What games do you associate with Sorry, James. What games do you associate with winter? I don't mean Christmas games like elf bowling, for example. Thoughts of Final Fantasy IX come to mind from a year where my neighbor and I had a couple of snow days and marathon played it. Kirby's Epic Yarn has become a yearly ritual with me and the wife since first playing it through near New Year's Eve / day. Bonus question. Do you ever foresee RFN taking donations in order to produce future content akin to what Player One Podcast is currently doing?
Do you want to handle the bonus first since it's
yeah, kind of... let's we can get that out of the way. Do I foresee it? No, I don't. We don't need it. We have never needed it in the past, and nothing has really changed in that regard. So I don't see us setting up a Patreon or you know, anything similar to that, unless something changed that, you know, really necessitated it, that, you know, either we wanted to do something very special with the show going forward that wouldn't be possible otherwise, or if something strange happened and we had to, you know, pay for our own hosting separately from the website or something like that. Now, I'm not speaking for the website. I'm not even involved in those kinds of discussions. But yeah, for RFN, I don't think so. I mean, you know, we were talking before the show, James, about the episode 400 fundraiser that we did, and I definitely considered that a one-time thing. That was, you know, to do something really special and expensive that normally we could not do. And really, I don't think that weekend could have come together if we hadn't asked people for money. So that's why we felt that it was justifiable there. But week in and week out, this show doesn't cost us much of anything to put together. Just the time. And you know, this is not anyone's job. So we're not expecting to be making money off of it. I mean, could we make some money off of it? Yeah, probably. But, you know, if it's, you know, if it amounted to $100 a month or something like that, I'm not even quite sure what we would spend that on. You know, we could buy more games with it, but really, is buying more games the problem that we need to solve?
Well, not for some of us.
You know, I mean, generally, no. Generally, we already buy too many games with our own money. So, you know, new equipment, things like that. But usually those kinds of purchases are so rare that we just consider it a personal investment and do it ourselves. So I don't think so. I wouldn't rule it out 100%, but I don't really see why we would do that.
Yeah, I mean, when we did 400, and we spoke about this a little bit, I mean, it was kind of like, okay, I don't know how I feel about this, but let's do it and see how the audience receives it. Like, ultimately, it became okay for me mentally because you guys were so absurdly, ridiculously generous.
Yeah, it was easy to earn that money. I mean, to not earn it, but to raise that money. And,
yeah.
And it happened way faster than, I mean, I wasn't sure we would even meet our goal at all. I chose the service that we did in part because it lets you, keep the donations even if you don't meet your goal. Because I was concerned that we might not meet our goal, and we met our goal in like 4 days.
Yeah, we were in the process of devising contingencies. I mean, it was...
Yeah.
We realized this is an incredibly useless expenditure of time we're doing right now because it's already been met.
Yep. Yeah, it snowballed. And, you know, so... you know, I certainly don't underestimate the generosity of our listeners, especially now, knowing what I know now after that experience.
But, yeah.
I'm not going to ask for money just because I think we could get some. And I'm not saying that's what other shows are doing. I think they have their own reasons for setting up things like Patreon. It's just, I feel like we would need our own unique reason to do it, and I just don't know what that would be.
And I would rather us at least explore something like, you know, properly using advertising before we start going to our listeners.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I don't know, there's all kinds of
quandaries we'd have to solve there as well.
Yeah, I feel like Squarespace probably wouldn't, you know, they're like the premier.
No, they're not going to do that.
Squarespace and Audible are probably the two most common podcast advertisers, and I feel like our listener base probably isn't large enough for what they're used to. Maybe we could work with like boutique, you know, advertisers, you know, smaller companies who want to do more targeted stuff, but
yeah, that's,
we haven't really been approached for that kind of thing, and we haven't really sought after it either.
And we don't really, I mean, to be totally frank, know what our listener numbers look like all the time either. So
yeah, we have some challenges.
It's tricky.
Technical challenges.
This is a very weird industry. The internet's weird.
Yeah. Well, podcasting is very like homegrown, and for a long time, there really weren't a lot of good tools for like publishing or subscribing or setting, you know, and then iTunes was the only game in town for a long time. And iTunes had, you know, tons of restrictions, and it's gotten somewhat better. But anyway, yeah, no, I mean, we do this for fun.
Yep.
And we want people to have fun with it and not feel that you owe us anything. If you listen to the show, that is more than enough. Thanks for you know, for us putting this together. And even better, if you want to, you know, send an email or comment, write a review on iTunes or something like that, all that is gravy.
Especially if you write it only about Amiibos. Yeah. If you write an iTunes review that just slams us for our Amiibo stances, you know what? You're my favorite person.
Did somebody
person.
Do that?
No, I don't know, but they man. Will now.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That's coming.
Sure. Probably. I mean, yes, probably one day. But anyway, the Winter Games. This is the more fun topic anyway. What do you guys think about this? Do you have anything that you just really associate with with it being cold outside and being cooped up and playing games?
I think it's a weird question to answer because I'm sure in my case and in plenty of other people's, it's not really so much about being a game that's made for the winter, like snow is a part of it or something else, but just this is a game that you have really fond or specific or powerful memories of that you happen to play during winter. In my case, mm-hmm. it was Persona 4 Golden on Vita. It had just come out, it was 2012, and I was kind of close to putting it down for a while because it has a very slow first 5 or 6 hours, unfortunately. And mm-hmm. I love the hell out of the game, but that's the truth. So I pick it up right around Kanji's Dungeon, which is exactly when it starts picking up. And I ended up bursting through the game, all 50 or so hours of it, in the span of a week and a half. And especially in Persona 4 Golden, when it was December, the snow was coming down, and Persona 4 Golden has this new winter part of the year, which is like January or February to the end of the school year, where it's pretty much snowing, it's winter, and you can do whatever you want, and it has an extremely powerful theme song attached to this winter season. And I don't know, that game was so good that it's... I think just playing that during winter while it was snowing, and then at the same time having that wintry music towards the end of the game, I don't think I'm ever going to forget it. Like, that game is probably going to stick with me forever. And when I think of winter and I think of winter video games, Persona 4 is probably going to be the first one I think of.
Nice.
It's funny because... So I had a big 2-week vacation last year, which I know people say that's big. What, for an American, that's a big vacation. Right in the early December, so before the holidays, because I worked the holidays last year. But that meant that, you know, I spent all this time when nobody was bothering me. You know, it wasn't like, hey, it's family get-together night. It was like, hey, I'm here, I get to do whatever I want for 2 solid weeks. So I played a shit ton of Persona 3 during that time period. And actually, to me, the game that sticks out more for its winter themes is the wonderful Christmas experience, Yakuza 4.
Hell yeah!
Which I played a lot of during that 2-week vacation and just smashed the crap out of people's faces to really get into the spirit of the season.
One of my favorite games. One of my favorite games.
Conversely, a little bit more holiday thematic, but still a little bit more disturbing. I was actually playing, going through my recitation of, man, Capcom used to be a good company. Man, Capcom used to be a good company. As I was playing Ace Attorney last week during Christmas itself, and then happened across a picture of a gun being pointed at the screen with text Merry Christmas from the first Ace Attorney game. So forever, that's going to be Christmas for me now. Thank you. Thank you, Capcom, back when you used to be a competent company.
For me, I think it's the only specific game that comes to mind when I think about this is it's a very strange memory, and it I don't know why this is the one that sticks out, but it's Donkey Kong Country 3. And I think it's because I got it. I think that game came out in 1996. So the same year as N64 launched. And I got an N64 at launch. Technically, I think 2 days before launch, because they basically like broke Street Day or Nintendo. It's a confusing story there, but anyway. So I'd already played through Mario 64 by the time Christmas came around, and I got for Christmas Cruisin' USA and Killer Instinct Gold. Now,
all right,
both you know got a lot of play, but they're not games that I could sit down and play for really extended periods of time. They were both like, you know, they were games that I was showing off to people when they came over, or I was trying to find people to play them with me, especially Killer Instinct, because playing that by yourself is not, you know, terribly fun. But Cruisin' USA it just gets old really fast. I mean, there is some fun to be had with that game. I know it's aged remarkably poorly.
Kind of in a special way.
Yeah, but at the time, it was cool. I mean, it was an arcade game, and it's not even a fantastic port of that arcade game. But it was like the new, it was the hotness on at the arcades at the time. So seeing it run on a home console was really impressive, you know, regardless of the quality of that port. And I just wasn't that discerning back then. So I mean, I had a lot of people coming over wanting to play Cruisin' USA. That's no joke. But anyway, at the same time, I got Donkey Kong Country 3, and it was kind of one of the big, last big Super Nintendo games. And what I remember is, I believe the N64 was hooked up down in the basement for some reason, but my Super Nintendo was up in my bedroom. And so I remember even on like Christmas Day, spending much more time with Donkey Kong than I was those N64 games. Because you can marathon a Donkey Kong Country game. You know, I mean, it's a single player game. You can play through it, you know, for hours and hours and hours by yourself. And you couldn't really do that with the other two. And so, yeah, I just remember playing a whole crap load of that. I think I beat it like the same day or the day after, you know, and then my mom was mad at me. But I kept playing it and I got 103% or whatever it was. Other than that, I would just say, when I think about playing games in the wintertime, I usually think of playing RPGs because, you know, if you're inside for long stretches of time, that to me, that's what I associate with playing an RPG. It's like I just have hours and hours that I can sit down and devote to this. And, you know, when I was a kid, I would replay all the way through Final Fantasy II or Final Fantasy III or, you know, Link to the Past or something like that. I would just sit down and just blast through those games and just eat up as much time as I could. So, yeah, that's kind of how I remember.
I think you're actually onto something with the Donkey Kong Country. Not just in terms of your own memory, but I feel like the Donkey Kong Country games are kind of made for a Christmas break type of experience because they have the right length, they're the exact right difficulty, and they're, in my opinion, like pretty much raw Nintendo magic. So if you get one of those games for Christmas, and in my case it was Returns, obviously, but if you get one of those for Christmas, it's kind of a flawless game to keep in your possession throughout Christmas and winter break until you go back to school. Especially since winter breaks are what, like a week or two for most elementary school kids and middle school?
Well, and also I think almost every Donkey Kong Country game has winter themed levels. And a lot of the music from that series, to me, it's weird because you think of, you know, it's a big ape running around, and it probably should sound, you know, like, you know, hot tropical jungle music, and some of it does, but there's something about those compositions, or maybe it's the instruments that they use, that just sounds kind of jingly to me. And Tropical Freeze more than most because of the theme of that game, because it is all about frozen islands. But even the earlier ones, I often felt like they just really kind of evoked that sense of you know of wintertime. Anyway, yeah, Donkey Kong Country. It's not even my favorite series by a long shot, but when I think about staying indoors in the wintertime, that one always comes to mind right off the bat. All right, well, let's move on to maybe a more substantive couple of questions here about Mario Maker, and we'll deal with them separately because they do ask about different aspects of this game. But as James pointed out earlier, before the show, Mario Maker is a game that we haven't really talked about much since E3. I mean, for that matter, Nintendo hasn't talked about it much since E3. But now,
They've talked about
if
it
you
at that award show, and that's pretty much it.
A few things have come out lately, you know, about the Mario 3 and Mario World tile sets being in there. That was announced at the Game Awards, and then just recent, I think in the last week, Nintendo like 100% confirmed that you'll be able to share levels online, and that was kind of a big worry bead for a lot of people about that game, and so I feel like Mario Maker is a game that is piece by piece, it's starting to come together conceptually as to what that game is really going to be about. There's still a lot of open questions that I think for sure, but you know, it's going to
Speaking
be
of,
they didn't they also say that it's going to be released like in the first half of 2015, something like that. I'm sort of doubtful about that,
I don't
but
know. I mean,
It does seem like it'd be a great summer release, especially for kids, you know, and parents playing with their kids.
It might not be that complicated of a game to make, though.
I don't know. I mean, maybe. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Well, we have a couple of questions here, and I'll read the first one. This is from Jay, and Jay writes, "Hey, it's me, that one jerk. I wanted to throw in my unqualified, unsolicited 2 cents on Mario Maker. Personally, I'm hoping Nintendo takes a page from Little Big Planet and includes a sizable helping of levels that do the respective source material justice, and some good levels in the new style, too. I don't have a lot of faith in the quality of user-created levels. I've played more than my fair share of Mario ROM hacks, and I can say with 103% certainty, there's that again, that they're all garbage. They all seem to fall into two categories, the infamous Kaizo Mario World and its ilk, and gimmicky puzzle-laden quests that force the game's engines to do things they weren't meant to just because they can, such as every level requires a key, which you have to pay 300 coins for, except on Tuesdays. There's no middle ground, let alone a sweet spot of hacks that make an attempt to pay homage to the original games with more of the same. There's an audience for those hack-flavored levels, but I'm sure as hell not it. Spare me your spin-jumping, spiny gauntlets. I just want to play some Mario-ass Mario levels." So I think what Jay is kind of referring to is the idea that, you know, this this Mario Maker package could include sets of levels
right.
made by Nintendo with the editor. What do you guys think about that?
Well, we've talked about it before that we assumed that was going to happen because, in fact, at the E3 demo, they did. There were three levels they created in the tool set on display. They were using it partially to show that you could stop a level mid-flight and go change some stuff up. But a lot of what they were just showing was like, look at the stupid chain reactions you can make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's one of those things, you know, I mean, I think at E3, you're setting up a demonstration of this editor. And so you have to provide something to show people. I think the bigger question is, you know, for a retail game, how much of that content is it appropriate for Nintendo to include? And well, what is the nature of that stuff? Is it more of these like crazy ROM hack stuff, you know, where every level is completely balls to the wall chaos, or super difficult? You know, similar to those DLC levels that they did for New Super Mario Bros. 2.
Man,
or is it more
levels.
Like, hey, we just made kind of a new Mario game using the old stuff? Isn't this cool?
I mean, I don't think you're gonna get a whole game's worth, but I mean, 8 to 10 levels seems perfectly reasonable.
It depends a whole lot on how much this game is going to cost. And the way I imagine this, it's going to cost $40. It's going to be at the Captain Toad price level. Because the way I imagine this game is it'll be a level editor. And I don't think it'll be as few as 8 to 10 levels. But there'll probably be like 5 to 10 levels for each art style or physics style. I really hope they use different physics for the different games. But if they want to charge...
They said they were going to.
Good.
They said they were, at least.
So, if they want to charge $60 for this, they really better, in my opinion at least, I can't speak for all Nintendo fans, but they better have something on par with Little Big Planet, which is, yes, the single player is constantly pushing you to get out into the community, but at the same time, there really does need to be maybe 30 to 50 levels to enjoy as well, if you're going to justify that content.
But see, for 30 to 50 levels, is you're getting into the territory of just a new Super Mario Bros. Game.
That's about like 2/3 of a new Super Mario Bros. Game.
Why couldn't this have as much content as a new Super Mario Bros. Game?
Well, but then they would just make a new Super Mario Bros. Game and sell that.
Well, I mean that.
Because it'll probably sell more than this, because those games sell stupid amounts of copies.
I don't know. To me, Mario Maker seems like something that, if they really explain it to people and let people know that it exists, this is something that everybody understands. I mean, I've even tried, I've done some testing on this where I've kind of dropped a reference to Mario Maker, you know, with people who I assumed would not have heard of it before. But when you mention Mario Maker, everybody understands the appeal of it immediately. They don't even have to see it. You know, it's like, holy crap, you can make your own Mario levels. And what I've heard multiple times from multiple people who don't really play many video games is, I would probably never put that down. Now, You know, whether that's true or not depends on how much fun it is to use and how good it is. But, you know, I think the potential for something like this is potentially much greater than for a new Super Mario Brothers game. So, you know, I hope Nintendo is kind of taking it seriously, and I don't want this to be NES Remix, which is another thing that, like, you know, if you explain what that is, I think a lot of people would say, oh, that sounds really cool, but it doesn't quite grab you the way that a Mario level editor does, you know?
I don't know. So it seems like the main draw here is the level editor, so I don't know that they necessarily need to put, you know, such a wide number of levels into the game. Because ultimately, what they want you to do is go out and make stuff. I mean,
you know, we could look at the example of the WarioWare game.
Yeah, and that's kind of where it was at. So they didn't
DIY.
put out a ton of. I mean, it didn't come with a ton of games.
It came with, I would say, a sampling. It came with a sampling to show you the kinds of things you could do, but also it had that great service where they, of course, you were able to share your levels with other people, and they even had the WiiWare version, which was, you did not have the editor, but you could play the games, which I thought was a great value. And they also did this great promotion where they had all these, well-known game developers from around the world who were creating little micro games for that thing and releasing them every week for free just to promote the game, just to keep people playing it. And I think that would be brilliant if they brought that back for Mario Maker. I mean, can you imagine, what it would be like to play a Mario level designed by, you know, Mr. Aonuma or David Jaffe or, you know, Amy Hennig or whoever. I mean, there's just so many, Michel Ancel from the Rayman series could make a Mario level. And I feel like Nintendo could they have the pull. I mean, Mario is such a behemoth in video games that everyone has a history with Mario, and everybody thinks they could probably make a good Mario level if they really thought about it and if they had the tools. So to me, that would be very appealing.
The David Cage one is 20 minutes and you press A.
But they could do that without having to do a lot of internal work to generate a bunch of levels in the first place. You know what I mean? They could even sell DLC packs of just, here's more levels that Nintendo made.
I mean, conversely, they could just trawl through and look at levels that are doing well and just, here's a couple levels we got. We're going to just push these out to you guys.
Oh, I really hope they do that. Oh, I mean, maybe not push it automatically, but at least move it up to the top of the, you know, of the community feature.
Well, like if in the menu screen they just had a, like, featured levels of the week, which is an option there, and it just grabbed the levels that they picked out from that were user submitted.
Yeah, well, Smash Brothers Brawl did that.
It did. And I mean, I did notice, and I spoke about it on the show during the demo at E3. They were occasionally, you know, looking at a level that somebody created and going to some weird submenu hidden in there and saving it.
Yes, I think that was for internal evaluation.
But I do wonder, you know, if part of that was them looking at them going, okay, either A, this is an idea for a level that we thought was kind of cool, or B, oh, the shit, somebody broke the hell out of this game.
Yeah.
Or
I think it was probably a combination of those.
Because, I mean, the one that I made they saved, it was just a real, real horror show. But, like, I do wonder if they have interest in what people are making. Like, if they're just going to dump this thing out there and go, all right, whatever. Or if they have people at Nintendo who are intimately interested in what these levels end up looking like.
It strikes me that Nintendo has to be interested in what people will do with it. I mean, if nothing else, it could inform what they do with Mario in the future, right? I mean, it could tell them, hey, here are the things that people wish was in Mario that we've never really done before. And if they see, you know, a trend of certain kinds of levels or you know, really accentuating certain elements of level design that they typically use very sparingly, that might kind of give them an idea of what to do in the future.
I just wonder, I mean, the question there obviously is, how do they sample these levels? Because there's going to be a ton of them created. How do they internally go through and find the gold? Because there's going to be, I'm not going to put a percentage on it, but the majority of the stuff that gets made is going to be garbage.
Yeah, well, you can imagine that they are probably thinking of having some kind of Miiverse-like editorial board, you know, just people clicking through levels, playing through levels all day to, you know, to look for brick shaped like penises and things like that, to look for people spelling, you know, for to you know, to look for people who are like drawing swastikas and in coins, because there will be tons of that garbage.
Oh,
and
my
they
God.
Do not want that up on the public community site, and I guarantee Nintendo will be taking measures that would seem draconian by most company standards to prevent that stuff. But in the process, that means they have a human looking at every level that is submitted. And that means that you have someone who can always look at this and say, oh, wow, this one's really cool. This one's doing something I haven't seen before. I should mark this. And then, you know, it filters up to someone higher up who sees a subset of all that crap. And you know, to me, if I was Nintendo, I would want that kind of insight into what people are making with it. Another, you know, possibility here that we haven't brought up, but this was suggested by, I think, Brad Shoemaker at Giant Bomb a few weeks ago, is that this game could include, and I don't think this is really going to happen. I don't know how realistic this is, but it'd be awesome, is it could include the original levels from all these different Mario games that they're, you know, including the tiles for in the editor. So that rather than have everybody and their brother go through and try to make 1-1 from Super Mario Brothers, it's already in the game. And in fact, you can just pause it and edit it as you play through it whenever you feel like it. So you don't have to go through the trouble of recreating that. You can go in and just immediately start hacking it and creating your own thing from there. And that also, you know, ensures that you don't have to start with a blank page if you don't want to.
I would guess levels like 1-1 and other iconic levels would be in there. I think it's unreasonable to say, hey, put all these games in here that you're also selling through other mechanisms.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be sweet if it was basically, you know, Mario All-Stars, but with an editor. I don't really think that they would do that, although it would be totally sweet. But it just doesn't seem likely. I don't know, Alex, any thoughts about this before we move on to another part of Mario Maker?
Yeah, I think just this whole online curation system is just kind of worrying to me. Just the way they're going to end up executing it, for two reasons. The first is that I'm really concerned with how they're going to organize the quality of this, because there's no assumption with how this goes with other games, because Trials does it a certain way that's pretty good, Little Big Planet does it a certain way that's okay, and then other games that have attempted this kind of thing have done everything from ranging to okay to real bad, so I'm worried about that. The other thing is that it really, 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 really has to be super quick to download and play a level. If not, queuing up a playlist of 8 to 10 levels, downloading them all at once so you can play them back to back. Because one of the biggest problems in games like Trials Evolution and like Little Big Planet, and it's what killed Mod Nation Racers, is that it just wasn't as fast as it really should be to download and get into a level immediately. And if I have to wait 20 seconds every single Mario level I download and play that's like 2 minutes long at most, I don't think I'm going to experience that game's full potential.
I will say the one perk we have is that you're not going to be downloading any assets, because they're already on your disc. I mean, you can kind of look at what downloading custom levels looks like in Smash Brothers, which is if my custom level gets picked, it doesn't really seem to make a difference in terms of how fast the game starts up. Because it's really just sending, at this coordinates, there is this piece. At this coordinates, there is this piece. So it does help. It's basically just sending a bunch of numbers versus, you know, sending an art asset is sending a bunch of numbers, but you're sending a much lower volume of ones and zeros. It should be fast. I mean, there's nothing about this process that should cause it to be slow. If it is slow, that is a failure on their side, because there's really nothing here that should be very complicated.
Yeah, well, I agree with Alex that would be a bummer. I mean, it would impact the playability of this,
absolutely,
of this thing quite a bit.
There are some really heavy consequences too. Think about it, if they don't get that specific part right, I think the game is going to get, like, let's say it would otherwise get like 8 9s out of 10s across the board, it would cut that to like 6.5 to 8 immediately. Just if that one part doesn't work. And I mean, it's wrong to put so much faith in review scores, but just as a meter of how people respond to it.
I think it would dramatically impact their ability to enjoy what they are experiencing.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, to be successful, this game needs to be as much fun as 100% consumer of levels, you know, as it is someone who just really only cares about making levels. And that's something where it's, you know, it's equivalent on PlayStation. Little Big Planet, I think, has really failed. I think Little Big Planet is greatly appreciated by people who like to make levels. But the people who really just want to play other people's levels and play the stuff that the developers make, I think that audience has pretty much withered away as the series has continued. Because those, I mean, the features work pretty well, but the things that people are making generally just aren't exciting enough to really make it worth going through all that process. And you know, there are gameplay issues with Little Big Planet that make it not as appealing as just a pure platformer. And I'm not really concerned about that with Mario Maker. But you know, Mario Maker should be a game where I can go in and never pick up a stylus and still feel like I could get my money's worth over time as I continue to download people's levels and just play through them, you know? And so I think Nintendo really needs to focus their energy on ensuring that that's the case, as well as obviously the editor needs to be really good. That seemed to be, you know, where the focus was at E3. And it probably should be, because if you don't have a good editor, then this thing isn't worth making. But in terms of polish, I think it has to play great. It has to feel like Mario. It has to feel like there's just unlimited library of Mario-level content that you can get in this game. And that alone should make it worth buying, even if you don't care at all about making your own levels. And there are certainly people who won't care to mess with the editor at all.
And I will say, it did feel like New Super Mario Brothers when we played it. I mean, the feel was right. But granted, everybody was just trying to be the biggest asshole they could. So it was a little hard to evaluate.
Yeah, in a live setting like E3, there is a kind of a competitiveness to that. And there were a lot of people playing it in groups, which I thought was like pretty cool to see.
Yep.
That it could work as a local multiplayer game. But it also, as you said, I mean, it kind of
it brings out the real monster in you.
Yeah, it kind of results in a certain kind of level being made that if you were just sitting there by yourself and making something to send a friend across the country, you might try something different. So James, why don't you read the next email about Mario Maker?
Sure. Well, way to ruin the surprise. Dan from Canada writes, "The recent trailer from Mario Maker got me very excited. I was aware of it at E3, but I didn't think much of it. After seeing the recent trailer, love that Super Mario World theme, it got me thinking about all the fun and crazy ideas the Nintendo community would come up with for this game. While I don't plan on making many levels myself, a lack of patience and creative skill, I am looking forward to playing all of the user-based levels. Hopefully the sharing feature is deep in this game. The trailer also got me thinking, does this spell the end for Nintendo-published 2D Mario games as we know it? Why would they want to make a game if someone could make something very similar in Mario Maker? Besides some new abilities, music, or boss battles, I don't see what else Nintendo could do, though being a Nintendo fan for 20-plus years, I have been proven wrong many times. The shock and awe of the new 2D Mario has faded, and sales have dropped off for every game in the new series, though that could be due to install base. So is this the final hurrah in 2D? 3D Mario, i.e. Galaxy, Mario 64, are my favorite types of Mario, so I hope that means more games will come out in the future. What do you guys think? Am I premature in my assumption that this spells the end for 2D Mario as we know it?" I want to point out right away that right now, New Super Mario Bros. 2 has just beaten the ever-living crap out of Mario 3D Land in terms of sales.
Mm-hmm.
So Nintendo likes money. That's the most important thing here, I think. And Mario Bros. Is one of their best selling series, probably top 5 or 6. As sales drop off.
I want to say it's the third best selling Wii U game. I think that's right. And and of course, one that is probably going to be Smash Brothers fairly short order. But I mean, it's these games still sell.
On the DS, it was a complete juggernaut.
It was
it was
50 million units, something stupid like that. It was
real scary. And that's not even a fantastic game.
No, it's good not.
Game. It's a good game, but the follow-ups were far superior, including, I think the Wii game is still probably the best in a lot of ways, but regardless, I mean, that also was just a total juggernaut in sales. But I don't think they're going to stop making them because, as you guys noted, I mean, they're huge money makers. But the good news is, I think what Mario Maker might signify is the end of Mario games that rely on these same basic mechanics. Because, yeah, I mean, adding new music and new bosses isn't really going to cut it when people can just make, you know, their own 2D Mario levels using all the same stuff. So to me, Nintendo has a reason to keep making 2D Mario games because they sell so well, but also the existence of Mario Maker means that they really kind of have to up their game. I think the impetus is on them to do something new and different and better and more exciting. You know, and we're already stuck in, I mean, the new Mario series is so retro. It is so faithful to the old formula, whereas, you know, with 3 and World, they were trending into, you know, some pretty adventurous territory at the time, and Yoshi's Island much more so even. So before Mario took its very long break in the late 90s and early 2000s, it was still advancing and progressing in some really surprising ways. And I think Mario Maker might force them to kind of go back to that and really reinvent what 2D Mario can be and add a whole bunch of new stuff that you can't do in Mario Maker. And that's really exciting to me. So I really see this as a good thing.
Well, and I would also say that they haven't double dipped on a new Super Mario Brothers on a given console to date. Like they've
more or
less.
I don't think they will.
And they've already kind of hit their two outstanding, unless they wanted to make like one for the new 3DS, but that would be real dark and a real dark and scary place for them to take that franchise. I mean, so
I honestly hope the new Super Mario Brothers series is over.
Well, I mean,
I don't
looking
want
at
them to stop making 2D Mario, but I want them to do something that is actually new rather than just says new on the box.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at a rough estimate for New Super Mario Brothers U, very rough estimate, is about 4.4 million sales, which for a Wii U game is stupid. I mean, that's a ridiculous number.
It's spectacular. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's done extremely well.
I mean, I would think they're probably done with 2D Marios for a little while anyway, obviously. But I would think that what they'll probably look at this and say is that, okay, well, now we kind of, I mean, what this won't do is it won't let you make things like boss battles, create cohesive overworlds, like I said, introduce new power-ups. There's sort of a Mario game is more than the sum of its parts, even though it is explicitly the sum of its parts. So just being able to recreate the levels doesn't necessarily give you the same experience, because what makes New Super Mario Brothers U kind of enjoyable is just how charming it is visually. And whereas, you know, New Super Mario Brothers 2, which came out almost the same time, it sort of gets its appeal from being like, man, just fucking look at these coins. It feels like one of those level hacks that we were reading about in the previous email. I mean, it's just, especially when you get to that last DLC they put out, which is coins, coins, coins. You're just like, what am I doing? Why am I here? This is ridiculous.
It feels like the ghost ship level in Mario 3, but that's the whole game.
They're already kind of pushing, at least on that game, to do something a little bit different. So I think ultimately the takeaway for them is going to be, how do we go ahead and we make a Mario game, we can make a 2D Mario game that provides a new experience. And I think, you know, New Super Mario Brothers, you handles it a little bit by trying to integrate the gamepad and making those levels that you have to work together on. We played those at PAX a couple years ago. They were actually, you know, pretty fun little experience. A lot of people yelling at each other because, you know, they weren't jumping and doing things totally in sync with one another. I think ultimately they're just going to have to go and say, all right, what new ideas can we bring to a 2D platformer? And I think historically they've just, for the new Super Mario Bros. Games, they've just sort of gone, well, we can put these out and make, I mean, they New Super Mario Bros. Wii sold 28 million units. They did not expect that when they made that game.
There's no way
they could have expected that when they made that game. I think taking a break, and ultimately they're going to have to at least take a break for a couple of years until there's a new system out, I think that helps them a little bit. I think ultimately just they're going to have to do what they say they always do with new games in a series, which they don't always do with new games in a series, but they're going to have to take a step back and say, what new ideas can we really bring to this thing? But ultimately, I mean, the sales of what is currently certainly their most regressive franchise or sub-franchise being what they are, I'm not necessarily sure they'd feel like they have to do that anyway. I mean, they may just feel like it's like a new Super Mario Bros. Game out there and go, like, just give us your money. We'll be back in 4 years of the next one.
Right, I really like your point about the new Super Mario Bros. 2 versus new Super Mario Bros. U, because if you remember, New Super Mario Bros. U, if I remember correctly, was made by the A-Team for New Super Mario Bros., while New Super Mario Bros. 2 wasn't made by amateurs, but it was made by the people who seemed to be younger at Nintendo and were learning to make Mario levels for themselves. And
something along those lines, yes.
They're way better. Those people who are still learning to make Mario levels are going to be infinitely better than 95 to 99% of the people actually putting stuff out in Mario Maker. So that represents probably the apex of quality we're going to get. And if New Super Mario Bros. 2 quality is the best we're going to get out of Mario Maker for almost every single level, I think there's still a place for an A-Team to keep putting out AAA content.
Yeah, I mean,
fair point.
That level, or that game especially, feels like such a crazy, weird experience that it almost felt like a fever dream when you were playing it. And I think that may be the place Nintendo needs to start pushing games in this franchise, is to just make them so, like, I remember that game way better than I remember the what I would guess is a superior New Super Mario Brothers U.
Really? Because I feel like 2 on 3DS is very forgettable. Like, one of the most forgettable Mario games ever.
See, I just remember the experiences I had playing it, like doing pass and play with somebody while we were playing this game, just laughing at coin numbers we could hit. Because it was just so stupid. It was ridiculous. Like, the initial playthrough was eh, but then once it turned into this kind of, like, all right, they say it's all about the gold, fucking prove it. Like, at that point, it became this kind of meta experience that I was having with this game beyond what it was originally designed for. And I enjoyed that more than I enjoyed anything in New Super Mario Bros. U.
Well, that's what Coin Rush was, right? That Coin Rush was pretty much exactly what you described.
I mean, every
28,000 coins in, like, a minute.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and there were some stages that was all that game. But, that game in and of itself was that sometimes anyway. Like, just regular levels were Coin Rush without the name.
Sure.
So, I don't know. It was a strange and weird and wonderful game, but not a great game, which is a weird phrase, but that's kind of how I feel about it.
All right, well, we've talked an awful lot about Mario here. I'm gonna move on to the next email, which is on a completely different subject, and I might struggle with the English here a little bit, because this was written by a guy named Jefferson from Brazil, and obviously English is not his native language. He writes in English a hell of a lot better than I could write in Portuguese, so I'm not making light of that at all. I might struggle a little bit here, but I think the email is fascinating and will be fun to talk about. So Jefferson writes, I know that you guys have fans all over the world, and I'm just going to make sure that Brazil is not an exception. Thank you guys for doing an amazing podcast. I recommend it for a lot of my friends, but sadly, for the most of the time, language is a barrier. Well, for my first email, I want to talk about how the eShop in Canada saves Nintendo fans in Brazil. It's really hard to be a Nintendo fan in Brazil because of high taxes, 71%,
yep.
Absurd prices, $60 3DS full retail, delayed releases such as Wii U launching in late 2013, a full year late.
I'm sorry to mean to laugh. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, lack of GameStop and etc. I know there are a lot of places like Brazil or worse, and we have to be thankful, to be blessed to be in the North American region, or as Reggie says, the Americas. But recently we are facing some problems. Captain Toad isn't coming to Brazil. Okay, the most guilty party is the official retailers that don't want Captain Toad on their shelves. But what about Nintendo? They launched Wii U a year later in October 2013 and a year after the release. We still don't have a Wii U eShop. Wow. United States doesn't allow you to buy from a Brazilian credit card, but Canada does. As a result, there are a lot of Brazilians who use Canadian accounts. My Nintendo Network on ID on 3DS and Wii U are from the Yukon in Canada, and I have no idea where that is. I know that what I'm doing isn't illegal, but it's immoral. I'm lying to pay less, have access to Club Nintendo, Digital Promotion Deluxe, release dates, Captain Toad, Mario Kart 8 DLC, etc. All of my Brazilian problems are fixed. Going all digital was the best choice I made. And as a Nintendo fan, it was never so easy to get games. So here's my question. What do you guys think about changing the country? Let's see. What do you guys think about changing the country to solve Brazilians' problems?
I mean, do what you got to do. This is the Brazil situation is weird, and he speaks about it in the email. If I recall correctly, Microsoft actually gets around it because they have a manufacturing facility in Brazil, and that gets them through all the stupid, you know, stuff they have to deal with tax policy and government. You know, I mean, effectively, these are semi-protective tariffs. And
So the high taxes are because it's a product made in another country. It's not a Brazilian thing, so it's meant to protect local economy, local businesses.
I mean, there are taxes as well that go on top of this, but Brazil does have an import tax on a lot of imported manufactured goods.
I wonder if that might be. If there might be a change coming to that with the Olympics.
So there might be a change for that anyway, because I actually did a little bit of research on this one. And about a year ago, pretty much around the same time that the Wii U launched in Brazil, it just so happened that Mr. Fizeme was in the Bloomberg office doing, you know, press junket stuff. Or reverse press junket, I guess. And he mentioned that the market that they're most... He, being head of Nintendo of America, is most exerting his desire for them to break into is Brazil. And he singled out the exact same things that this email talks about. It talks about, you know, the inability to get their product on the shelves, the high price of their product due to things like taxes. And one of the solutions that he apparently just sort of air pontificates about while they're around, and he's a smart guy, and he knows how to handle the press. He's not going to just let something slip, is... Like they've done things like explore the possibilities of operating a manufacturing facility in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
Although he says the exact quote he gives is, "For complicated products, it's not always easy to do, but we've looked at it a number of times." And he speaks about that right now. There's some concern about the technical capacity to produce stuff there versus just continuing to use Foxconn in China. They also said that there are piracy concerns, and occasionally, the U.S. Trade Representative. Organization continually singles out countries where piracy is a problem. Brazil's been one of those historically. But it does seem to me like they're taking it seriously. They are releasing this. They did release the Wii U there themselves. They didn't do what they have done historically in markets that they regard as, you know, secondary or tertiary, but just licensing it out to another company. Brazil had that situation with Sega for a long time where a third party was releasing Sega consoles in Brazil. And actually, I think they might have localized the games into Portuguese. So I would say that with the ascendancy of Brazil as a, you know, as a market with a middle class economy, Johnny mentions, you know, with both the World Cup and the Olympics going.
Right, of course. I should have said the World Cup first because that's a bigger deal than the Olympics in most ways. But yeah, I mean, Brazil is about to get a huge. Influx of attention and people, if nothing else, and probably money. I'm sure they're counting on that. So you wonder if certain economic reforms might go along with that.
And to that point, it is current. I mean, it's I'm trying to remember what percentage of Latin America lives in Brazil, but it's a huge percentage.
Brazil is a gigantic country.
It might be 50%. I think that's high, but I think I've seen that. I mean, it's but you think about what a lot of countries, you know, they tend to be smaller in Latin America, especially in Central America, but in South America too. Brazil geographically is huge.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a market there that is seeing, granted with the current economic situation in the BRIC countries, it's not like it was 3 or 4 years ago where there was rapid growth, but still. These are growth economies that international companies want to get into that historically they've been held out of. So you did have, you know, some homegrown products like the Zeboid or whatever, Zebo, whatever they called it, that weird homegrown console. You did have companies that operated facilities there. I think what you're going to see is you're probably going to see some onshoring of manufacturing in those countries to get around these rules, or you'll see international companies attempt to make plays to have those rules relaxed. And ultimately, I would say for people in Brazil now who struggle to, you know, play games that they, you know, do what you have to do to play the games. There's nothing wrong with you going around, you know, and saying, I'm in Canada. It's, you know,
oh, yeah. I mean,
Nintendo knows That's you're doing the, it because they can look at your IP address and go, the fuck you are.
Yeah, you're basically just importing your games. I mean, the important thing is you're paying for them.
Right.
So I don't think you should feel guilty about that at all. I mean, you could pirate the games and then you should feel guilty about it. I don't ever recommend that people pirate games. But importing games or, you know, whatever, you know, like setting up a Japanese PSN account so you can download games that Sony won't localize. I mean, that's awesome. I'm so glad that you can do that. You know, it's not really a solution to the problem on any kind of large scale because, you know, the vast majority of people will never understand that they even need to do that, much less how to do it. But I'm so glad that people who are determined have some way of doing it.
It's a shame that it's necessary.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But, I mean, I understand that this is sort of the weird confluence of national political, you know, intention, you know, objectives for economic development. I understand this is a very complicated issue from the economics and governmental standpoints, and that ultimately Nintendo and pretty much every, you know, technology manufacturer is currently kind of stuck in. I mean, this is known as the country where the iPhone is the most expensive place on earth. And it's because of, you know, this is government policy sort of clashing with a globalized economy. And ultimately, at some point, that's going to crack because people like money. And this is sort of the corrective force of capitalism, where at some point, somebody is going to say, fine, we will, you know, somebody, there may be you know, you may have a situation where the Foxconn of Brazil comes into existence, where we'll just make stuff for you. This will handle your Central American market. You know, it's some point, or there'll be enough lobbying put on Brazil that maybe they relax it, or some policy change happens. But eventually, this will change. But for the time being, do what you got to do. There's nothing wrong with that. By doing this, by being the force that is buying these games, I mean, Nintendo knows you're in Brazil. They're not stupid, and this is driving their policy. They see this information.
If they're not going, if there's no Nintendo Brazil or no like suitable Nintendo Brazil to take the money for the games you want to buy, at least someone's getting it. As far as I'm concerned, this isn't even a moral question. The one thing I'm just slightly worried about, or not worried, but the one question I have is this Captain Toad thing. Who ultimately makes the decision to not put Captain Toad out, and how do people find out that it's not coming out outside of store retailers or just retailers?
So there is a Nintendo of Latin America, and I'm trying to remember where it's run out of. I want to say it's run out of Mexico, which is their biggest market in Latin America right now in terms of sales.
Oh yeah, by far.
But I don't necessarily know, you know, who runs it, who makes decisions about what gets released there. Nintendo's got some information. It right now, I mean, so I'm looking at their webpage right now. The Nintendo eShop availability for Latin America and the Caribbean is the headline. And the entire text on there is, Nintendo eShop for Wii U is not available in Latin America and the Caribbean except for Mexico. There are plans to release the eShop at some point in other countries in the region. However, we do not currently have further details to announce. Did you find what you were looking for? Yes or no? Like that's
dude, I can't imagine owning a Wii U and not having the eShop. It would be a completely different platform for me.
It's a whole different thing to look at. I mean, there is, and ultimately, I think the decision is probably being made to whether or not to release games in certain markets. It's probably being made in Seattle or San Francisco with the input from whoever's running their Latin American operations. Like they're probably coming to them and saying, hey, you know, this is what we've got. This is how we expect this game will do. You know, maybe this is what we need to do for translation for this game if necessary. And somebody's just making a call. I mean,
in terms of Captain Toad, I would also just add that, you know, that game is only about a month old, even in the U.S. and Japan. So, well, it's a little older in Japan, but it could just be that they haven't announced the release date for it yet. So, you know, hopefully that will come at some point. You know, it's also, you know, if not very many people are buying Wii U in Brazil because it's so expensive, then I'm sure they're going to get less games because it's going to be harder to justify every game that you put out. So if it's not a surefire success, they probably won't do it at all.
Right.
And that's even more reason that this stuff needs to get fixed.
Yeah, just doing some digging. Nintendo's been talking about, in fact, we have articles about it dating back 2008. Of Nintendo discussing trying to get into Latin America, Central America, you know, Central America, South America, and to really get, and it seems to come up every few years. Oh, yeah, we have an article based on an interview with Bill Van Ziel, which was the head of Nintendo's Latin America branch at one point. It's like, this is something that they are constantly working on, and you know, you buying these games off the eShop, like I said, do what you got to do. But I guarantee you that they're keeping eyes on this. Like they see it, they understand. You know, when they see people buying these games, even knowing the hoops you have to go through to get them, it just incentivizes companies like Nintendo to A, do what they have to do to make it possible, and B, to lean on the government, their home governments, to try to, you know, make the changes, make the trade deals that make these make it economically feasible for them to operate in these markets.
All right. Well, that's enough of our global economics policy. Alex, could you read the final email, please?
Sure. Brad writes, "What if Nintendo released an American football title based on amiibo characters? Imagine a football type on a pedestal, where you would build up your team. One amiibo equals one team, so a $13 purchase is all that's required to play. Based on countless minigames for various players. You could then take your team up against online opponents. I envision endless customization as well as even story elements, but I don't profess to have all of the answers here. Could this not work? Especially if you imagine the number of sports, that could be tacked on in such a fashion."
I would love a charge and chuck amiibo.
yeah. That would be cool, but I would guess that Brad is referring more to officially licensed. So, you know, you buy your, Baltimore Ravens amiibo, and, you know, that's how you unlock the team in that game. And so, I mean, I think it's a time-honored tradition in Madden that most people who buy it really only play one team. You know, you have your favorite team,
right,
you play that
team.
Yep, you customize it, and the developer puts a ton of effort into, you know, getting all the player models and all the stats and everything, all the logos and the songs and whatnot in the stadiums for every team. But most people who buy those games will only see a small fraction of it. And so it's appealing, I think, from a sports fan perspective to say, hey, what if I could pay less and only get the part of the game that I care about and then go online and play against other people who have other teams, and I don't have to own those because those aren't my team. Those are other people's teams, and we'll clash online. I could see it maybe for something very arcadey, you know, not like a real Madden competitor, but something more along the lines of you know, of like a Mario Tennis, but, you know, with teams, with real teams. I could see that being kind of fun for people.
You know, working out licenses for teams is tricky, obviously.
And it's expensive, too.
Oh, hell yeah. But
I would guess that these would not be the same price as Smash Brothers amiibos.
That'd be significantly more expensive.
Yeah, they might be 20 or 25 bucks. But that's still better than paying 60 for a whole game if you, you know.
Does he mention in the email specifically, you know, I guess he's saying here explicitly teams, like real world teams.
I'm reading that into it, but that's the only way it makes sense that you'd have one amiibo that represents a whole team.
Well, I was thinking you could take your Mario amiibo, and this is a team that you've built, and it just saves to the Mario amiibo. And you could see, let's say you wanted to have three teams. You have a Mario amiibo, a Peach amiibo, and a Wii Fit Trainer amiibo. And you've got different teams built onto those different amiibos that you've trained different ways. I mean, we've already seen the beginning of the dark age of people training their amiibos on Smash Brothers to fight like tournament players. I mean, this is really the end days where we're going to have Turing machines.
You make it sound so apocalyptic, but I mean, well, I think yeah, that's we're gonna what have Nintendo to introduce intended a, in the first place.
We're going
to
have
exactly
to introduce a Turing
wanted.
Machine to determine whether or not this thing's a real tournament player or just a facsimile of one.
It's, you know, it shouldn't be that hard to determine.
But, like, you could just use the amiibo as sort of like a stand-in for what the team is. But ultimately, I don't necessarily see how that is any different than just a save file, except it's got portability, whereas save files on the Wii U currently don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a few differences. I mean, first off, it's totally confusing to set up a whole team of football players and then save it to the Wii Fit Trainer amiibo. I mean, you're not going to be able to necessarily, if you have multiples, it's going to be hard to remember which one's on which. And also, I think Nintendo cares a lot about the amiibo content activated in any particular game being directly related to the character that you actually
sure.
put on there. So I that's why I don't think this would be. Also, I think there's some technical reasons that you couldn't save this much data to Smash Brothers
that's
amiibo.
Entirely
possible. It's gonna have to be its own thing. You know, there's a lot to be said for, you know, well, you know, maybe one kid likes one team and another kid likes another team, and they can keep their team straight because the, you know, the piece of plastic that their file is saved to looks like that team. I mean, it's a player, it's the star player. They probably wouldn't do it as star player. Maybe it'd be the mascot. You know, maybe it's the mascot wearing
the mascot,
a helmet
yeah.
and it's got the logo and everything on it. And that way it's just really easy to keep track of all that stuff. And that way also, I mean, you simplify things like, you know, you can distribute more of a particular team in the region where most of that team's fans are located. And so you don't have as many problems with the scarcity of amiibo that you have with Smash Brothers figures.
I think the idea of this game is a little too aggressive for Nintendo to actually make a reality, especially if we were to talk about American football, because that wouldn't have nearly the appeal in other countries as it would in America, let alone we don't know how many people would be interested in a Wii U game based on American football. So it would probably have to be soccer if there was any sport, and then you couldn't really get FIFA or Madden involved, because the licenses are probably ridiculous, and I believe EA still has exclusivity for a little while on the NFL.
Yeah, the NFL license is especially in a weird place, because I want to say that the court case regarding whether or not they could sign these kinds of licenses is still up in the air. There's kind of an antitrust question in play here, which the NFL answers with, no, each of our teams is competing against each and other team. We're not a trust. We're not one single entity in. Yeah, I mean, it's...
Yeah, also the NFL itself is technically a non-profit, which
right.
is the biggest malarkey I've ever
heard.
It's
so dumb.
Anyway, yeah, it gets very complicated. But to your point, Alex, I feel like this is something that, although Nintendo themselves might not do, this seems, you know, an idea ripe for the picking by some other company, like EA.
You know, if EA wanted to reintroduce Madden to the Wii U platform, which I don't know that they do, but...
This would be a great way to do it.
If they did, this might be the kind of partnership they could take with Nintendo, where Nintendo gives them, you know, basically gives them the amiibos at cost.
Mm-hmm.
And says, you could sell these if you want to get into the plastic crap game, EA. You're the only player not in here.
Just let's say EA wanted to do this kind of thing, and they wanted to do Madden Skylanders. Why would they ever give that to Nintendo?
You've just thrown me into a rage.
Why would they ever give that to Nintendo? It's out, especially compared to all of these other consoles. And if it was a Nintendo, I bet they might. Nintendo might try to push for amiibo, but that would be. And I love Nintendo, but that would be financially dumb on EA's part to partner with Nintendo for this, unless Nintendo offered an amazing deal.
Well, let's take a step back. What if Nintendo just? I mean, we've talked about them making a, you know, Mario tacklers football or whatever dumb nounative they would use to describe the or nounized verb that they would use to describe their football game, American football game. I mean, let's say they make this and then they just deeply integrate amiibos into it. Like, they release a line of amiibos of characters that you put them in there and you get. You run into the risk this becomes a pay-to-win scheme, but what if it's instead you could really train up the individual performance of a character based on the amiibo? So you can, as opposed to just having, you know, their current kind of how they do the Mario Sports games, where it's you and a shit ton of toads, you could sort of fill it out by trainable characters that you can put on amiibos. And then they can issue new amiibos, they can reuse the Smash Brother amiibos. It gives them some flexibility there. I think the tricky part is there's a lot of people on a football team. There's a lot of people. But I think they would probably just limit it down to, you know, there's just three down linemen, a receiver or two, and a running back and a quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to have trouble selling people on a game that requires multiple amiibos to actually play it.
Well, and I don't think you'd necessarily have to. I think what you'd have is you'd have ones you can swap in that gains experience from playing and gets better. So maybe they wouldn't catch this pass when you first put them in there, but after five or six games, you throw it in their general direction and they're Calvin Johnson. And they just catch it, and it doesn't even matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you do run the risk that people view that as a pay-to-win scheme, though.
Isn't that also, I mean, aren't Madden cards kind of that way?
Yeah, a little bit.
They're a little bit pay-to-win, I think.
But that's not real-life plastic. I think the consequences are a little different in this case.
Sure, and you may already have them because you have them from your original, you know, your original Smash Brothers game,
right?
So you may feel like if you don't have amiibos, you're at some kind of terrible disadvantage. But at the same time, you should probably not play with friends who are going to screw you like that.
All right. Well, here's a different angle on it. What if you did this like baseball cards? They don't have to be plastic, right? I mean, we sure. Already know that amiibo can be, you know, you can put those little chips into a lot of different formats, and there's already a collectible sports memorabilia market, and that's been around for 100 years. So if you can make these sort of premium type sports trading cards, that's something that a lot of sports fans, you know, at least have sometime in their childhood. Or teenage years, they have some experience in collecting a lot of different things that represent a lot of different players from a lot of different teams. And if you now make that interactive and you have all that incorporated into a video game, that seems really appealing to me.
Especially if they were to say make a deal with Upper Deck to make these mm-hmm. things. It's like, hey,
yeah,
we're gonna make a special line of cards that are gonna have these things in them.
Yeah, and then you can trade them with your friends, and you can collect them, and you know, it's you put bubblegum in the wrapper. It's a huge hit.
I wonder if they could hit that $299, $399 price point. It might have to be just like two or three cards. Like, I don't know how much the NFC technology would actually cost, but considering they probably have to store something on there, you probably wouldn't be able to get two or three cards, more than two or three cards in a pack.
Yeah, so and it may be that if they could find a partner willing to defray some of this cost, that they're willing to say, okay, we'll throw in this amount, you throw in this amount, and we'll just split the return.
Right, like, hey, you guys were going to make these cards anyway. How about we make the game, and, you know, you make, you know, premium cards. They'll be more expensive than your typical cards, but also they'll have a lot more value to people because you can play this game with them. You know, and from there, you can easily look into... And we've talked about this before with Pokemon trading cards,
yeah.
Of course, you know, Magic the Gathering cards and things like that. I think there's a lot of potential there. And to me, it makes more sense. You know, I mean, these Nintendo character figurines are something that, sure, there are Nintendo fans who've wanted something like that for a very long time. But there's a lot of people who don't want to have a bunch of those lining up on a shelf. You know,
right.
they don't want people to walk into their home and see 50 Nintendo characters lined up.
And then immediately walk out of their home.
Yeah, but you can be very easily, you can be a closeted baseball card or Magic card collector because you can throw those in a binder and put them in a closet. You know, I mean, they
yeah.
stack up, they're much more discreet, they're much smaller, and they don't have the kind of same kind of footprint, and they're not as expensive per unit. So it's a little bit easier to get into a hobby like that, I think.
I'm just excited about this idea from, like, just to think about it, not even including any business concepts, because even if they tried something like this and it failed, it would be completely unheard of, at least on this scale in the industry. And then even though we wouldn't be around for this 90 years down the road, how cool would it be to own, like, these weird Nintendo baseball cards that were around for 6 months in 2016?
Somebody's book somewhere in 2058, there would be a chapter on, do you remember that time Nintendo owned a baseball team? What about that time they made their own baseball cards? They're fucking nuts. And they'd probably combine Nintendo of the, you know, early 90s buying the Mariners all the way down to their RFID baseball cards into one chapter. But, you know, nuance gets lost in history. But it's, you know, there is a certain novelty to it that I can see. I don't know what the market would end up being for this, but it is certainly a, it would certainly be something that could be useful in the event that they produce their own sports game that they could then tie in franchises back to. The only sport I think that is Major League that's not currently completely licensed out with exclusive licenses is baseball.
Oh, what about Sony? Do they own exclusivity to that?
No. Because
there's the license deal with baseball is weird. It says that I believe 2K is the only third-party company that's correct. Allowed to make baseball games, but any of the first-party platform holders can make their own if they choose.
Yes, versus the other major sports leagues where it's tied up. You know, mm-hmm. You own the rights to make a NHL-based game.
Yeah, and that may not last for long. But I mean, you guys remember? I forget where this came up recently. But something reminded me that Nintendo used to make NBA games on the N64.
They had their Kobe Bryant games that they had that GameCube game near launch.
Which was supposedly pretty decent.
Yeah, it was.
I never really played it. I think I rented the N64 when maybe once, but I know so little about basketball.
They actually featured it as one of, I think it was the second game they had in GameCube demo kiosks. The first one was obviously was Luigi's Mansion. I think it was number two.
Well, baseball would make the most sense. I mean, Nintendo has a long history with baseball. They own a team, as James mentioned. It's popular in Japan, so they can market it in multiple regions. And
the rest of the world is familiar with it.
And the cards are – I mean, baseball cards are just much more of an institution than, say, football cards.
Right.
So it makes more sense to me. And it'll give them an excuse to revive Pennant Chase baseball.
Yep.
Or go back to Ken Griffey. Is Ken Griffey the third in the league yet? Maybe they can just skip ahead to him.
No, I don't know. There is the third.
All right. Well, I think we've exhausted that topic.
He was a five-tool player, John. He's a five-tool player.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is going to wrap up this episode. Thanks, everyone, for writing in. We love getting your emails. We read all of them, and we try to answer as many as we can here on the show. The address, as always, is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And if you've never written into the show before, we would really love if you just, you know, took a minute to think of something that you'd like us to talk about, or something that you're really curious about. Anything in the news lately? You know, if we can use an email to justify talking about something, then that is always our preference, as you've heard recently on the show. So we really do appreciate all the interaction and participation that we get. And hey, this episode wouldn't exist without it. So thank you very much. As I said before, we will be coming back with a normal episode very soon in early January, and probably a little bit later in the month, we'll be doing our top fives. And, you know, let us know what your top five games were from 2014. If we get some interesting lists, we might read those out. You may just help us remind us of a game that we played that we otherwise might have forgotten to put on there. That's like the terror when you make these lists.
Oh yeah,
right?
It's you sit there with the release list and go, God, is this everything that came out this year? Did I miss something? Did we miss something? Did Nintendo World Report miss something? What?
Mm-hmm.
Did some region bullshit that happened and this game came out in 2013 everywhere else? What am I doing here?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and, you know, there'll probably be something very similar to that happening soon over on Connectivity, where you can often hear Mr. Alex Calafi We hope that you'll go check that out and hear much more of Alex over there. Alex, aren't you also doing the Nintendo News Report? Is that what it's called?
Thank you for bringing that up, because I didn't want to throw that plug out there wildly. But yes, I am doing a news show on our Nintendo World Report TV YouTube channel. I host a weekly news show called Nintendo News Report with Neil Ronahan and Scott Thompson, both of Connectivity. We talk about the news, and it's generally a real good time. We just put out our Christmas episode, in which we talk about a lot of fun Nintendo Christmas memories, so I hope you guys check it out.
Excellent. Well, good luck with that, Alex. I'm sure it's going to be really good.
Thank you.
I think I saw the first episode, or maybe I just heard the audio on Connectivity. That might be it.
Yeah, we did put it in the first episode.
Yeah. But anyway, there is a whole lot of writing and podcasting and video from Alex over at our website, which you should check out, NintendoWorldReport.com. And with that, we wish you a happy new year. And we'll look forward to talking with you again very soon here on RFN.
Bye.
Bye.